So we're talking today with Libby Davis, Member of Parliament from Vancouver East. Vancouver East, and Libby, please correct me if I'm wrong, is the only riding in Canada that does have a safe injection site?
Actually, it's the only safe injection site in North America.
Wow. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how the InSight project got started and how you obtained the funding for the InSight project?
Well, originally, InSight was advocated for by drug users themselves, and we had so many needless and preventable deaths from overdoses in the downtown east side from people using non-prescription drugs, non-medical drugs in terms of, you know, drugs that are illicit. And often people are self-medicating, but the number of overdoses was just astronomical. A group called VANDU, the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, and I work very closely with them, as well as others, certainly local representatives as well, started working very hard to advance this idea that there should be a safe place to inject. Basically, the way it was is that people inject, you know, wherever, in back alleys, on the streets, in, you know, filthy places, because, you know, what they're doing is, quote, illegal, and they're often harassed by the police. And so just from a public health point of view of ensuring that there isn't a further spread of disease and making sure that people have clean and safe facilities, making sure that people don't overdose, that they can get help when they need it, seemed like, you know, kind of a common sense, humane thing to do. And in fact, in Europe, safe injecting facilities are very common. They're part of the spectrum of services around drug use. It's a what we call a low threshold. It means that when you're dealing with a population of people who are chronic users, they may have tried many times to get off drugs. Treatment is often not very accessible. Sometimes there's long wait lists. And so, you know, it really is imperative that that there be places where people can be that are safe and healthy. And as we like to say in the downtown east side, dead people don't get treatment. Mm. And so the whole initiative came about as a public health intervention, a strong need to save lives. So many people were dying. And having said all of that, the battle to get InSight open and to go through all of these sort of bureaucratic rules and procedures with Health Canada, because it required an exemption under the Controlled Drug and Substances Act. That's how InSight began its operation. Took several years to get it up and running and to get all those approvals, because at the very beginning, you know, there was all kinds of opposition from some from the local community, from local businesses. But I think since it's been open, there have been so many studies on InSight, but it's really showed and proved itself to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. It is literally a place where people's lives are saved and where people then can make a connection and maybe get into treatment. In fact, upstairs from InSight is another facility called OnSight, which is a detox facility, and that can help people make the next step into rehabilitation. So it was a huge struggle, and I have to say that it was the users themselves who led it, who never let up, and who always believed that if they kept pressing, that eventually this would happen. I remember in the early days, I would lobby Alan Rock, who was then the Federal Minister of Health, and Bud Osborne, who's a very well-known poet and was at VANDU at the time. He came to Ottawa, and we met with Alan Rock, and we kept bugging him and, you know, writing letters, raising it in the House. There were demonstrations locally. It got the support of the city. It even got the support of the police department. And then finally, Ottawa came on board. But, of course, since the Conservatives have been elected, they've always wanted to get rid of it.
Now, let me ask you about that right now. Tony Clement was the former Minister of Health, and whenever he was confronted with the question of the safe injection facilities, he always brought up ethical problems. There's ethical issues. We have to study the ethical ramifications. Mm. Is this still the attitude of the Conservative government, even though Tony Clement is no longer the Health Minister?
Well, I believe so. It's hard to say precisely. I'd love to say that it's no longer their attitude. I wish I could say that. But we've not had any information from the new Minister of Health to say that you know, she thinks it's okay and they don't have an issue with it. However, on the positive side, we haven't had anything further saying they're going to close it down or try and close it down. Now, there is one very important development, and that is a number of people took the issue to Supreme Court in BC, the BC Supreme Court, and they won that court case where basically Insight was declared as a provincial health facility. And the judge, it was a very good ruling, basically said that it should continue as a regular health facility and that the federal government could not be sort of closing it down. So we have that judgment. Now, the federal government, Clement, went ahead and appealed it. So it is under appeal. But as long as that court case is, and the appeal is still pending, they can't close Insight down because its permit has run out now. I mean, the big battle was over the permit from the federal government to exempt them from the Controlled Drug and Substances Act. And it kept running out, and they kept on renewing it temporarily. They would never make a definitive decision, and always, as you say, raising these questions about how Insight was working, that it was somehow unethical, and they could only ever quote one so-called study that had no scientific peer review and was actually put forward by an organization that's led by a former MP who was like Mr. Anti-Harm Reduction. That's Randy White from Abbotsford. He's no longer an MP, but he started this sort of anti-harm reduction group. But other than that, there's been almost three dozen scientific peer-reviewed evaluations and studies that show that Insight, you know, is working. It's not a panacea. It's not the total solution, of course, but it's a very important element of dealing with the drug crisis in the Downtown East Side. So I spoke to the new Minister of Health when we got back to Ottawa in after the election and said to her, please, keep an open mind. Do not allow your government to, you know, in effect, contaminate you with their sort of ideological position on that, because that's all it is. Have an open mind. Go down and visit. Do it quietly. Find out what's going on. Now, we haven't heard anything from her, so maybe no news is good news. But in any event, even if they do continue to try and close it down, the court case is still in our favor. And two, I actually believe very strongly that they will not be able to close down Insight. It actually doesn't get any federal funding. It did originally as through Health Canada, but it doesn't now. And I believe that the support for it locally is so strong across the political spectrum. Even Gordon Campbell, in BC, the Premier supports Insight. So I don't think they'll be able to close it down.
Now, you talked about the peer review studies justifying the effectiveness of the safe injection sites, the BC Supreme Court decision, the City of Vancouver. Do you think that these safe injection sites would be a good model for other cities to follow?
Well, where you have an environment where you have drug users who are on the street, who are very destitute, and where there is a lot of injecting going on, a facility like Insight that is clean and healthy and has peer counselors, it's a welcoming place, it's a place where people can actually find a connection and maybe get back into getting support in the healthcare system. I mean, we're dealing with a population that's often very criminalized, very marginalized. And in fact, we do know that both in Montreal and Toronto, there have been sort of community local initiatives to look at similar facilities. The City of Victoria has wanted to have a safe injection site. And my feeling is that it's not up to the federal government. It is not the mandate of the federal government to basically veto what is being considered and developed in a local community where people know what needs to be done. I mean, this is where the expertise is, frankly, not in Ottawa, not in the bureaucracy, and certainly not in the Conservative government. So, you know, I'm not saying, yes, you know, we've got to open up one here, there, or there. It's up to those local communities, and if they feel that a safe injecting facility is part of a strategy to help them cope with what they're dealing with in that particular community, then they should be able to do it. It should be enabling, right? Not something that's vetoed. And as I said, there are other communities in Canada who have expressed a great deal of interest in seeing a similar kind of operation, where there's public health nurses there. And you know, at this particular facility, Insight, nobody has died of an overdose in the facility. There have been overdoses, but nobody's died because they've had you know, you can make the health intervention right then and there, and people can then get the help that they need and the counseling that they need and so on. We actually need more in Vancouver. I mean, Insight is at total overcapacity. It should be open 24 hours a day, and it should be open at other locations as well.
Now, the effect that you have mentioned yourself, that these sites are not a panacea for preventing mm-hmm. the drug issue, but they are definitely a means to reducing the effects of drug use onto the rest of society. Do you think that in the long run that these sites are a measure towards preventing the problem itself, especially when run in conjunction with the on-site facility upstairs that you've already described?
Insight is part of what we call a four-pillar approach, which includes prevention, treatment, harm reduction, and enforcement. I mean, there is a role for enforcement as well. And they're much more sophisticated and advanced on this in Europe. They, you know, it's not an issue at all where, you know, to either have a heroin maintenance program where you can actually, if you're a chronic user and you've tried to get off and methadone hasn't worked for you, that you can actually become sort of a medicalized patient for heroin. I mean, that's very common in Germany and Switzerland and even in the UK. We had a trial here in Vancouver that was quite successful, but it's been stopped now. So to me, it is part of the broader spectrum. But, you know, Tariq, the biggest issue, I think, is facing prohibition itself. Like, one of the problems, and the debate here in Vancouver is quite far advanced. You know, we started with harm reduction, and we then included things like Insight. And then I think what was sort of staring us in the face, the elephant in the room, so to speak, was prohibition itself. Like, one of the reasons that drug use is so dangerous is because people are so far removed from, you know, kind of the normal regimes of life in terms of, like, visiting your doctor or getting the kind of health care and support or having decent housing and the proper kinds of supports that, you know, most of us expect to have in our lives. And so because these users are so criminalized and so at the margins of society, the enforcement of the law and the criminalization of drug users in some ways becomes more harmful than the drugs themselves, because it forces people into very unsafe and high-risk situations where HIV/AIDS, you know, the increase of that begins to go up, where things like hepatitis C, and so it becomes very much a public health issue. And so here in Vancouver, the debate is not only about prevention, and that's particularly true for important for young people. I mean, when you make this subject so taboo and you say to kids, you know, if you smoke marijuana, you're going to become a cocaine addict, which you know, kids know is not true. It's like saying everybody who drives a car is going to kill someone. Then you drive it underground, right? And so this issue of prevention of education is about really acknowledging that drugs exist in our society. Some of these substances, whether it's alcohol or tobacco or other substances, some of them are legal, some of them are illegal, that they exist, that people use these substances. And the most important thing is your own self-informed knowledge, your own health, like using responsibly, knowing what's harmful and what isn't. And we don't have that attitude, though. Most of our drug education comes from the police. Hmm. And I always say to people, you know, would we send the police into schools to give sex education? I don't think so. Why would we send them into schools to give drug education? They don't know anything about it. Only because these substances are deemed to be illegal, and it's, you know, sort of putting the fear of God into people about enforcement. And that doesn't work. It's not a deterrence. I mean, that's been shown over many, many decades. You know, we're just facing in Vancouver a whole slew of gang-related deaths. That's, I am sure, related to the drug trade. Mm. You know, this is very much a black market in the drug trade. It's all undercover.
Mm. These are some brilliant points that you are raising, and some definite food for thought. I would like to ask you one final question. Given the procedures that you went through over years, dealing with health minister after health minister, trying to get these sites established in the Vancouver East Riding that you are responsible for, what advice would you have for people in Montreal who are trying to set up some of these same sites, who are going through the same bureaucratic battles that you have already fought?
Well, to me, the transformative thing in Vancouver was when drug users themselves started speaking out. I mean, there are many taboos about drug users, you know, the stereotypes that come to mind. When drug users themselves said, you know what, I'm a human being. I have rights. I have, you know, I have the same needs to health care, to decent housing, to a quality of life. And it changed the debate. And it was very important that there were other allies like me, right, as an elected representative, as someone who could pressure on the inside and to work in solidarity with it. I mean, I went to many Van Doo meetings. These are my constituents. And I think it's very easy for politicians to say, oh, well, those people don't vote, they don't count, you know, whatever, and write it off. It's not a popular issue. I felt like it was the most critical issue when I got elected in 1997. And because so many people were dying, and I decided that I had to take it on. Otherwise, I wasn't truly representing what was going on in my riding. And so, to be successful on this, you do have to build a broad alliance. I mean, now around this issue in Vancouver, we have drug users working with elected people, working with academics, working with people in the public health arena, working with bureaucrats. I mean, it's quite phenomenal. And even with the police were tough to convince, by the way, very tough. And we had many, many meetings where sometimes the senior people were okay, and sometimes some of the beat officers were okay, but there was like a whole bunch that were like, no, this isn't right, this is wrong, we're enabling drug use, and that's not what it is at all. So it takes time to kind of build that alliance locally to then put the pressure. And in fact, one of the ironies is that when Clement was asked about Montreal, he said, well, he would consider it, and we were outraged. Like, why would he say he wouldn't rule it out in Montreal, but he would, you know, fight against it so hard in Vancouver? And so we felt like there was a double standard. But that broad alliance was very important. But the transformative thing was when drug users themselves became organized and spoke through their own voice about their own experience, because nobody could refute that. And it really humanized the issue, and the media began to respond to it in a different way. So that was a very critical thing.
Libby Davis, a member of parliament for Vancouver East, which is the only riding in all of North America with a safe injection site. We look forward to fighting the fights that you have fought in the past, in the future.
Well, there's something called the DARE program. I forget what it stands for, but it's D-A-R-E. It's very prevalent in the States and a lot of police departments. The RCMP is very big on it. Dealing with prohibition is all about control, right? There are huge vested interests in the judiciary, in the police departments. Whenever there's a debate about drug use, the first up at the microphone in the press conference are always the police. In my opinion, they have no place to be there. They're there to enforce the law, not to make the laws, right? And so the way they kind of weigh in on this issue is through so-called education for young people. The DARE program has been thoroughly discredited because it really is like, they do peddle this line of zero tolerance, and that if you smoke marijuana, you'll become a cocaine addict. I mean, you might become a cocaine addict if you smoke marijuana, but as I use the analogy, it's like saying everybody who drives a car will kill someone. And of course, it's all about.
You use the key word responsibility.
It's about knowledge and responsibility. I mean, kids use all kinds of substances, whether it's smoking, alcohol or marijuana or harder drugs, that the key is, intelligent and honest education. And there are programs in the States, actually, where they've started alternative programs. There's a very good organization, if you want to do some more research, called the Drug Policy Alliance.
Okay.
It's the major group in the U.S. that is fighting prohibition. I've spoken at their conferences. They're a brilliant group. And they have a whole kind of education proponent for young people that's based on, you know, real information about drug use, about what's harmful, about what you need to be aware of, what happens if, you know, someone you're with is going into an overdose, what is dangerous, rather than this ridiculous line that comes from the cops, which is basically, you know, you bad person, you know, you're going to get nailed, it's been shown that making these substances illegal does not deter use.
It sometimes has the opposite effect.
Right. Because it drives it underground, and so kids are actually getting into stuff. I mean, they say it's easier to order hardline drugs on the phone than it is to order pizza. Mm. That's all being driven by prohibition, right? And by organized crime and by an illegal regime. I mean, and believe me, I'm actually very anti-drug use. Personally, but I feel it's much better to have a regulated model that has superb education for young people that's realistic and honest, instead of this, you know, phony stuff that the police do, where they go into high schools and they show videos of the downtown East Side and say, you want to be like this? You know, I mean, it's like, and the kids know it's not true, and then they get turned off, and then you've lost that connection, that dialogue, right?
So you've also dehumanized the people on the Vancouver East Side.
Exactly. It's all about, I mean, it's very much a class issue, by the way, because there's drug users at every level of society. There's lawyers, stockbrokers who they're the ones who don't get caught, though, right? They can afford to have a good connection. They can afford not to be caught. It's only the people on the street who are so visible and poor who are the ones who get nailed with enforcement, right? So it's very much a class issue, too, in terms of how we see this drug issue. It's a very interesting subject, and I've learned that when you take it on, you basically kind of take on all of these forces in society. So it's a very interesting issue. But the Drug Policy Alliance, if you're interested, has a very good website and very good info. And the guy there, Ethan Nadelman, he's in New York. They do fantastic work.
Okay. Are they thinking about creating any alliances with any organizations within Canada?
Well, there's not a similar component in Canada. There are a couple of other groups, though. We do have the National Harm Reduction Network, which is more focused on harm reduction, but they are kind of expanding their horizons. And then there's another group that started about 2 years ago called the Canadian Students for a Sensible Drug Policy, and it's mirrored on a similar group in the States, because in the States it's pretty horrific. For example, they do random testing of students who will get student loans, and if you're found to have drugs in your system, you can be cut off your student loans. So it's quite heavy down there. And so there is a group that started in Canada called the Canadian Students for a Sensible Drug Policy, and they're, in fact, I went to their founding meeting in Montreal at McGill, and they're now opening chapters across the country. There's a woman in Ottawa who kind of runs it, and so they've been closely connected with a group in the States. But we don't exactly have the same, there is kind of a network of groups in Canada, but we don't have the same kind of big organization, because they, you know, in the States they get a lot more private foundation money, which we don't get here. But the Drug Policy Alliance is very, very interested in what's going on in Canada, because ironically they see us as much more advanced. If you remember, we had a bill at one point to decriminalize marijuana under Chrétien, and it just got lost because of an election and it never came back. They got scared. But they see Canada as more advanced, so they're very interested in what goes on here. There's one other group that's also American, but it has Canadian component. It's called LEAP, which is an amazing group. It's LEAP, and it's Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And these are actually former police officers and judges and prosecutors who have come to the conclusion that prohibition itself is, like, insane.
If prohibition is not going to work, a regulated environment is what is needed.
Yeah. So they actually have a group in the States called LEAP, and they have some fairly major players, like the former police chief of Seattle is one of the leading members. There's a former police chief from Miami. We have a former judge from BC that's a member of it. Judge Paradis, he's in North Vancouver here. He's retired, but he's a member of LEAP. And so they've been very outspoken, which is really good, because it kind of gives the credibility, like, wow, these are former police officers who are actually speaking out, former judges, right, or prosecutors, who are, you know, realizing that all of the work that they did in this judicial system that was so screwed up and, you know, has not brought us any further in terms of this issue.
Absolutely. Libby...
Sorry, once you get me going on this, it's hard to stop me.
Well, that's it. We could definitely talk for a while.